And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
New VanCast to round out the week. And Drancer, this was supposed to be the big reveal day. We were told a week ago that today was the day that Abbotsford AHL would essentially be born, that they'd have a name and a logo and colors and all the stuff you need to play the game on the ice. And then late last night, for some reason unknown at this point, a little bit of a delay. So it's not going to be reveal day here to round out this week.
No. I'm told it's an availability issue, so something to do with whatever press conference is going to be held to unveil, announce, make it clear, whatever the Canucks are doing. And I think we all are pretty confident at this point that it's Canucks, right? Like, that it's the Abbotsford Canucks. Presumably the jerseys and branding won't be too distinct, right? I mean, how different will it be if the team's got the same name, right? Not exactly, you know, the way you would have wanted it to go off, but honestly, not a huge deal. Like, this does happen. Seems to have been an availability issue in terms of lining up everyone for the presser. Tons of hands in the pot on something like this, right? I mean, for all we know, it's a mayor's availability issue or local dignitaries. I mean, there's a ton to organize. There's a part of me that still remembers setting up these events, you know, like setting these things up and just like the, you know, the nervousness about someone being like, oh, I'm not sure I can make it. And I'm like, oh, I already sent out the press release. Like, you're going to fucking make it. What are you talking about? So like, I've been there, not anything. Like, I saw some reaction that was like, well, if they can't even do this,
right?
And I don't know that I think that's entirely fair. Like, it's not a good look. It's not something you want to happen, but it's something that can happen. You know, like a really important part of my former job of doing PR well sometimes is just knowing when to be like, whatever, fuck it. You know, like if that's what we got to do, that's what we got to do. I spent so much time fighting stuff like this, like fighting to make sure that it went off on the day of, you know, like, oh no, we already sent the press release. Like, no. I was like so nervous about it all the time. And it's like, at the end of the day, you just piss people off and it doesn't actually matter. Like, no one is going to remember that the Canucks' AHL club affiliate logo announcement or whatever was delayed 2 days. It's not a big deal.
It's not. And I'm glad, like, we're on the same page here. Like, look, yeah, there are enough issues around this team. Yeah, they double clutched. But you know what? They had never put out a formal release of time and date. Like, it was always been vague. And right. I think they had kind of left it loose-ended. And here's the bottom line in all of this. And again, they're an easy mark. People love to throw darts. I get all of that. They're going to have a name. They'll have a logo. They'll have a color scheme. They'll have uniforms on opening night. They're going to get there.
Like, yeah, this This is it's not like they delayed their first training camp day or their first, you know what I mean? Like, this is a press conference, effectively, right? Like, it's a delayed press conference. I don't have a problem with it. I'm not concerned. I don't even see it as a sign of concern that it's like, have the Canucks bitten off too much, more than they can chew with this AHL team? It's like, no, whatever. They'll be fine. Like, they've got a lot to accomplish, but this is battles. Not a problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Pick your battles in the month of July. And the other thing is, you know, look, they're out of practice putting press conferences together. Like, I think that this is going to happen in person in Abbotsford. We haven't seen in-person press conferences in 18 months, so there are moving parts that they haven't had to deal with in a long, long time. And quite frankly, I think this is, you know, if you step back and, okay, yeah, so they didn't get it on the day that they originally had intended, but they get to have an in-person press conference rather than unveiling this on Zoom. Like, I think ultimately when this comes down, whenever it is next Wednesday, like, this is a win for the organization to be able to trot out a uniform and to trot out like colors and actually have people. And, you know, because I just think it would have lost something if they had to roll all of this out on Zoom. But I kind of think it's
agreed.
Cool that we're going to have – we're almost back to press conferences.
Let's go. Well, and it is an important sales opportunity. You know, I was reflecting a little bit. We had a conversation about the likelihood, the apparent likelihood based on reporting from the Abbotsford News that the Canucks would go with the Abbotsford Canucks, right? And I was thinking about that uniformity because I'm sure there's going to be disappointment in the market when the Canucks reveal a jersey that's like pretty similar to what they wear at the NHL level, right? And a name that's exactly the same as what they wear at the NHL level, and it'll be like, great, like, what creativity, you know? And I think that's a fair reaction. Like, I understand that reaction. I think it's shared by, you know, people internally. Like, I'm not saying I'm sure as in I'm being thoughtful. Like, I know for sure it was a subject of, you know, that there's been internal debate. Like, for sure there has. And so, and by saying that, I'm not confirming that it is the Canucks thing. I just believe that it is, based on the Abbotsford News' reporting and what I'm hearing. But I do think the fundamental reason I like it, having reflected on our previous conversation earlier this week, JPAT, is that there are some lingering concerns about how hard the Abbotsford market is, or how soft the Abbotsford market is, based on just how brutal the experience with the Heat was, right? And I think we all believe that it'll be different with the Canucks in town. I think the AHL believes it'll be different. I think the Canucks believe it'll be different. I think it's a good bet. I think it will be different. But doesn't naming the team the Canucks, like, it might not be as romantic as something like aviation themed or arrows or something that maybe paid a little bit more tribute to the local community in Abbotsford itself or the Fraser Valley more widely. But there's one thing we know sells in the Valley, and it's the Canucks. Like, there's something like straightforward about just selling the Canucks in the Valley that I kind of respect.
Yeah, and so it is. It's a branding and a marketing play, and if you sell a Canuck jersey at a game in Abbotsford, that fan can wear it to that game, but, you know, if they come downtown to games, then they'll have a jersey they can wear to a Canuck game as well. Like, there's a lot that makes sense to me, quite frankly, and I'm not going to get worked up about a team name. I'll get worked up about the product on the ice and some of the moves around stalking that team, but ultimately, the team name, and we laid it out. Like, there are lots of examples at the AHL level of NHL and AHL teams that share the same name. There's a synergy there. There's a branding opportunity, and the Canucks have, you know, long been a team trying to strengthen that brand and do some repair to that brand. It's taken a bit of a beating here, you know, in the last couple of years. So, look, they're going to unveil it on Wednesday. It may get out before then. You know, if you believe the reports, it's already out there. And then it's just a question of, you know, ultimately what logo do they run with, if it's different than the one that the Canucks use, or is it completely on brand? But we'll find out all of that on Wednesday. There are other things that we have to get to around this hockey team.
This has been 10 minutes of very, very negative Vancouver media, by the way. Hugely negative, JPAT. And I'm sure we've got some listeners who are just like, man, you guys, I come here for critical Canucks talk. Like, this is the number one bullshit.
Yeah, but that's what the media does, right? The media.
So I just wanted to pivot into quoting Kucherov. I already bought the t-shirt.
Hey, I want to, and we'll have to get to the Stanley Cup in a sec, but just a couple of really quick items of business that I want to cover off. Friend of the podcast, Newell Brown, is back in the National Hockey League, so we should point that out. Familiar landing spot for him. Third time in Anaheim.
Wait, would you say it's a drop pass into Anaheim?
You could go there.
Yeah.
Hey, I also, I saw another Athletic mock draft. Did you win this one as well?
I did. I clearly did. Did you not see it explicitly referenced?
Yeah, I did.
Which is how you know in the channel. I was like, LOL, winning my second mock draft. William Eklund, please. William Eklund at 9. Come on. No way. But that's okay. Like that, you know what? It illustrates a really useful point, which is that this draft is going to break down in an unpredictable way. And whether it's William Eklund or Mason McTavish or Kent Johnson or Simon Edvinson or Brant Clark, like one of those guys is going to fall to the Canucks at 9. The Canucks are going to take him. And, you know, Jim Benning's reaction is going to be like, we can't believe he was available to us at 9. And the whole industry's reaction is going to be like, I thought that guy would go in the top 5. And everyone's going to be like, wow, the Canucks, great value. One of the draft's big winners. Like all the Canucks have to do is sit there and just take who falls and they will be widely recognized as like, what great value. Like there's a ton of scouts who will like whoever the Canucks get at 9 more than whoever was drafted at 5th overall. And that's going to make for them like very early on making a ton of like draft day winners lists. All they have to do is keep the pick, not trade it, and don't overthink it when your pick comes up.
This mock was a little different though. Like it didn't really follow. Like I think Wallstedt, the goaltender, went like deep in the teens in this one. And I 16. Still think that there's going to be somebody that takes him before the Canucks get to their turn to pick at 9.
Who?
I do. I think San Jose would be a team that, you know, they needed goaltending for.
That would be incredible. Because then the Canucks end up with a pick of 2 guys.
Right.
That would be unbelievable.
Right. But, I mean, there are people out there. I've read people think Wallstedt is really the 3rd best prospect. It's just that nobody's going to take a goalie that high. So I like the fact like this draft has some intrigue. Like there is, you know, a lot of drafts, the top few are pretty boring, let's be honest. Like this one, to me, there could be some curveballs. That's what I love about the draft. So we'll find out. We're basically 2 weeks away and we'll start to get some answers. And for all this talk, Tom, of this crazy July, here we are a third of the way through and really nothing has happened yet, which just means like stuff does have to happen. So it's just back in loading this month and we'll see. And now that the final is done, the cup's been presented, the buyout window is open. You know, the ground is fertile to make some of this stuff happen. But
So the Travis Dermott extension didn't get your blood pumping. How about Scott Wedgwood re-signs in New Jersey? He's off the market as Canucks cheap backup candidate in the event that they buy out Braden Holtby. There we go.
Yeah, no.
Nick Bjugstad's off the market.
That was a nice piece of business for Minnesota. I mean,
it was. A tidy bit of business, as all the hockey bloggers say.
But I guess we're all just waiting for the main event, which, of course, is Nate Schmidt out and Oliver Ekman-Larsson in.
Nick Bjugstad's college roommate, Nate Schmidt.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, nice little mini connection there. Yeah, well, and let's talk about Nate Schmidt quick, right? Like, we have to, because I think we've got more clarity on it now. Certainly, I have more clarity on it now. And just that, you know, it seems to be complicated, but it also seems to be cooperative. And I think that's a really important thing to note here. Like, sometimes things are tricky to cover a little bit because they don't fall into the box that we're used to. You know, like, this is not a Tarasenko style story, right? This is not a firm, I want out, trade me, trade request story, right? But it is a story where I think both sides independently have realized that year one of the marriage really didn't fit the way anyone had hoped, right? I do think that this was a player who came in and has played for the Capitals and the Vegas Golden Knights and had certain expectations and felt that they were unmet. And I do think that, you know, all things being equal, he'd like to move on. I think all things being equal, the Canucks would like to move on. I think the way that it lines up structurally, where the Canucks need to move salary out to move in any big piece, I think it makes sense that Schmidt would be one of their guys on term and money who would actually have some cachet around the league
probably still valued as a 2-3 type quality defenseman, quite rightly, despite his down season in Vancouver. And so for all of that, I do think that this Schmidt story is one to watch. This is real. This is not, you know, smoke and mirrors and rumors. Like, this is a real thing. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. All of that said, it's cooperative, right? No one's throwing water on this. No one's saying, nope, that's not true. Schmidt's very happy. And no one's throwing gasoline on it either and saying, yeah, we have, you know, they're like, oh my God, what a jackass. Like, everyone's still working together. And that strongly suggests that Schmidt, being, you know, who he is, a good team guy first and foremost, like, if he's not moved, he'll be back. He'll be back. Like, that, this is not done. This is not the end of the story. This is not even a problem. This is just open communication between team and player. And because it's a little bit more nuanced, it doesn't fall into the usual sort of black and white cookie cutter trade request storyline that fans are used to consuming. And that creates this situation where people are talking about, you know, like, oh, this is rumor, like, name one source, like, did it, like, why is no one on the record on this? And it's like, well, because it's complicated and it's human and it's cooperative and everyone's keeping it close to the vest. The way that it's being reported, the way information's trickling out might be a little vague, but it's actually vague because the situation's complicated and actually relatively amenable and professional, as opposed to something a little starker and more dramatic and you know, guys sort of burning bridges to get the F out of town. Like, that's not what's happening. So it's just one of those weird ones to report out. And we've dealt with a lot of this over the course of the year, JPAT. And I'm just disappointed and annoyed at this point too, that, like, even though, you know, this story is basically being told by Dhaliwal and Elliot Friedman and Ian McIntyre and Patrick Johnston and myself, you know, you, everybody in this market, we're basically have the same thing. It's come out in drips and drabs because it's a complicated one to tell. And then fans are like, well, where's the source? Where is it? And it's like, well, no, it's what are you talking about? Like, we're not all singing from the same fake hymn book. Frickin' morons. Like, this is just a hard story to report on, in part because of the fact that the sides are still kind of working together here.
If we go back to late in the season, right towards the end of the year, though, there was discussion, the COVID situation, that there would be fallout, that there might be guys that were looking to move on. Are we able to connect dots to Nate Schmidt on that front?
I mean, I think so, yeah. I do. I do think we can. But, you know, there was... So, I think there was a lot of smoke about a variety of veteran players. And so, you know, Schmidt was included among them in terms of private considerations, private people that I was considering anyway. But more than anything, it was just an understanding in a sense that in the wake of what happened, especially on the backside of the COVID outbreak, right? The communication throughout the outbreak, but on the backside of the COVID outbreak with the dead schedule, with the return to play, with JT Miller's comments, with the way that he was put up there, what was said, what came next with the NHLPA call and how that all unfolded, that there was a group of veteran players. And, you know, I don't know that we had a very, very set idea of who, but I think we knew that there was something, right? And we talked about it, right? We talked about it on the VanCast back in May. Yeah. Can we roll the clip?
There's not a ton of damage that can be done this offseason. Then that, you know,
no, but that's part of the two years that Jim Mitt referenced in
right.
That midseason Zoom. So I'm saying when they've got money to spend. When
I don't know why I said that. I actually regret saying it immediately. There's not enough. There's not much damage that can, this is a crucial offseason. There are a ton of unique opportunities, ones that the Canucks absolutely have to avail themselves of. Not to mention the leverage of getting Hughes and Pettersson done at the right level. So, I mean, that's going to shape fundamentally your options for, you know, constructing a contender around this group during their prime years. You know, I saw on Sakaris and Price, you referenced a veteran player who's, you know, flying directly home from the Calgary game, right? Not
yeah.
Sort of coming back to Vancouver for exits. I think there are potentially some trade requests coming. I mean, I think this is an unhappy group. And I think navigating this is going to be really, really tricky for the Canucks. So from that perspective, too, I certainly don't think that the frustration being expressed in the Vancouver market is uncalled for or irrational. Or, another Vancouver market being crazy again. Like, I actually think the Vancouver fan base and market might have the clearest, a much clearer assessment at this point of this team, certainly than like the national media covered.
So right there, right? That was a different discussion. That's like 36 minutes into a podcast. We weren't trying to make news or headlines off of this. Like, I was just saying, well, the cap space is so limited. I don't know that it matters a ton. There's not a ton of wiggle. And then I was like, you know what? Actually, this is going to be a complicated offseason, in part because I think complicated situations could arise. And this is a good example of what I was thinking of, albeit perhaps a less dramatic one. But, here's the point. Like, I said that just – and I was correcting myself. I was, like, rushing back to be like, hey, actually, there's more going on here than, my original statement implied, and I want to note that. And – the reaction that I got was, speculation, rumors, it gets shared like a out of context tweet, right? Yeah. And here's the thing, obviously you and I are going to hear more than we can say and report, right? Like, that's part of having trust. That's part of doing your job. And you always work to get the story and share everything you can with your audience to the best of your ability, but you can't always. And so, with this story in particular, like, do fans want to have a sense of that if I have a sense of that, or do they not? I'm pretty sure that a informed Canucks fan who's, hardcore enough that they're listening to us on a regular basis, like, if I have a sense that there's an unhappy group of players, want to at least have a sense of that too, right? Like, isn't that the job?
No, completely.
And
they want the goods.
They want the goods. And right now in this marketplace, we're at this moment, like, on the tail end of one of the toughest seasons to cover ever, right? Zero face-to-face access to players. Zero face-to-face access to Canucks personnel. A COVID outbreak that resulted in the organization not making public comment for 10 days, right? And then eventually making one with a doctor and doing a really good job considering the restrictions on them, I think. But nonetheless, unable to comment directly through it. There's been a ton of this, like a ton of these stories. There was, debates like, is the media overblowing the COVID symptoms? And now everyone's like, well, very clearly the Canucks had the worst COVID outbreak in the NHL, in all of professional sports, in fact. Then there's debate, well, is the variant confirmed or not? Some people were running with the variant was confirmed, while The Athletic ran with, the variant's not confirmed yet. And both were actually right. Right? Like, sources were confirming the variant because the PCR test indicated a lot of information that actually helps you confirm a variant, but it hadn't been specifically genetically sequenced at the CDC, right? So both information points were actually correct in the light of day. It just took a little bit to get there. And everyone's just like, oh, lying media, rumors, where's your sources? And now the Schmidt thing comes and everyone's just, it's the same fucking story. Now, look, people have got things wrong, right? People do get things wrong. It's impossible to be perfect. The Quinn Hughes IV story appears to have been incorrect, right? So I'm not saying we're perfect as a group. But
no, of course not.
No. Our good friend, Jason Botchford, with the Marion Gaborik moving to the Nicola Valley, right? Like, we've all had this happens. This happens to the absolute best of us. The key is you correct the record, you take responsibility. And I think to a man, our troop does this. And I'm, we're starting to see these notes that's like, with the breakdown of 1040, we're seeing all these new shows. Everyone's aggressive. They're operating in bad faith, fueling this negativity in this market. And it's just like, no, like, I mean, it is competitive. It's competitive for guests. It's competitive for takes. No question it's a competitive market, but no one is out there lying deliberately. No one's making stuff up. There's no fake facts. Like, we have to at least be able to trust the facts here. And as I look over all the times over the past year that people have accused me of speculating or what have you, or you know, trafficking in rumors, or it's just like, man, I'm so fucking careful. It's insanity. I heard the Quinn Hughes IV story. I didn't go with it because I don't report, like, my standard is that I don't report individual symptoms without permission, right? Like, that's the only reason I wouldn't have gone with it, was if I don't hear from the player specifically, that doesn't meet my personal standard. It was an easy mistake to make, that there were reliable people who believed it. Not just reporters, but people I was talking to internally, sources, people I'd consider team sources. So it was just a very confusing time. And it's like the Schmidt story. It's like, there's been so many challenges with covering this team this year. I think more than anything, you're seeing some of those seams in terms of how the team is talked about. And there are bad faith actors using that to suggest that the information flow around the team, particularly any information flow that in any way threatens their overall worldview that, like, things are hunky-dory, which pretty clearly they're not for a team that just sustained the biggest COVID outbreak in North American professional sports, gutted their backroom staff to the point that, you know, less than 40 people were working for the Canucks at one point, had a large group of unhappy veteran players, hung coaches out to dry. Oh, that's the other one. People are like, Ian Clark ended up resigning. It's like, yeah, man, after his star pupil went to bat for him in public, right? Went to bat for him in private during the course of his contract talks, and the Canucks ponied up with an unprecedented 5-year deal for him, right? Like, Travis Green got paid something like almost $1 million more than Rod Brind'Amour. You know, like, fuck, this team had to come correct to make amends. That's not because it wasn't a story. it's crazy. Like, this team required nuance to cover over the course of the past year. Sometimes the seams of covering that nuance showed a bit in terms of how it was discussed and reported on. And the people that are using that weirdness over the past year to imply that, like, people are out to get Jim, and as a result, you know, the reporting in this town, like, oh, it's, you know, just salacious bullshit. It's like, I don't actually see a ton that's been wrong. The only thing that I see that's wrong is the increasing, like, fake news conspiracy applied to everything we responsibly say in discussing and covering this team. And it's driving me fucking mental.
I can tell. No, I mean, I'm with you. And look, like, I've been in this market longer than you have, working in this market longer than you have, and so it goes back years for, like, the number of times that I've heard people say to me, either, you know, when I was on the radio or social media, you know, like, you guys are just making stuff up. Like, you got to fill programming. You need things to talk about, so you start making them up. To which I would say, like, you and I do this 3 times a week. We used to do it 2 times a week. We extended. Like, I don't think there's a lot of fabrication on the VanCast.
Zero.
We basically deal in fact. And these
except when we say nice things about each other.
Well, there's that. But these people that, you know, quite often will say, you know, like, you know, just deal with the facts. Like, and then I always think to myself, like, put yourself in my shoes, or Tom's shoes, or any host's shoes. Like, you got to fill 3 or 4 hours of radio programming. You need things to talk about. So, yeah, at times you're going to get into some conceptual stuff. You're going to get into some abstract things. We deal in some speculation at times. That's not lying. It's not fabricating the truth.
No.
We've got a job to do to fill programming hours, or in the case of the podcast, there's no set time, so we just talk till we got nothing left to talk about. But I always think, like, my God, imagine listening to that person's talk show if they were only going to deal with what they saw on the ice within the 60 minutes of a hockey game.
Well, and also it's things like someone credible reports that, you know, Sam Reinhart wants to be traded and would like to be in Western Canada, right? Are you then speculating when you're like, Sam Reinhart makes his summer home in Vancouver? Would he fit for the Canucks? Let's build 15 minutes of talk about why or why Sam Reinhart wouldn't be a fit with the Canucks.
There's no lie there.
No, far from a lie. You're taking facts and you're just creatively applying them, right? Yep. And then using the facts on the ground, the Canucks' roster construction, their cap space, to discuss a concept. Like, that's the job. It's not... Anyway, we don't even need stuff to talk about, JPAT, to fill hours. You and me, in particular, And apparently with me doing 90% of the talking, according to our commenters. I mean, we went 2 episodes per week during the fucking pandemic. We can go all day on nothing. This is the Seinfeld of Canucks podcasts. So, you know, it's a Canucks podcast about nothing. Name that Canuck. We'll do 15 minutes about obscure Garth Butcher facts. Let's go.
When I made my announcement that I was leaving, and the next pod, we talked about some of the responses and the reactions, and I forgot that there was one guy that was like, I love the Van Cast. I've been with you guys throughout, even when you did Name That Canuck.
I was like, what?
Even when we didn't name that Canuck.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
Even when we did it. I liked that. I thought that was good. People enjoyed it. But
we did. And ultimately, yeah, those are the most important people on this podcast. Although we do love the VIPs.
Love the VIPs.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, so we talked a little bit about Nate Schmidt and the broader discussion around Nate Schmidt. Now Oliver Ekman-Larsson seems to have re-entered the conversation, although perhaps that's more on the Coyote side of the equation or even the Oliver Ekman-Larsson camp. Last year it was a two-team focus, the Canucks and the Boston Bruins, but it does sort of feel, Tom, like the Canucks, at least this week, have sort of been dragged back in to this OEL discussion.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you can't, when you're a team with the Canucks' cap issues, I just don't think you can turn away wholesale from a cash-strapped team, right? A team that, like, the Canucks and the Arizona Coyotes, considering Arizona's particular issues, are actually a natural fit. Because the Canucks have a bunch of money on their books where the cap hit is high and the salary is low. You know, by 6 days from now, when Erickson and Beagle get their bonuses paid out, Beagle will be due like $1.2 million in salary with a $3 million cap hit. Erickson will be due $3 million with a $6 million cap hit. And, you know, Antoine Roussel's due $1.7 with a $3 million cap hit, right? So you're talking about $6 million in salary liabilities, but $12 million in cap hit, right? The difference between real cash and cap cash is $6 million. That's huge. That's a huge deficit. So if the Canucks were going to try and reallocate salary cap space, a concept which I've been obsessed with, obviously, right? We've talked about it at length on this podcast. You know, finding a trade partner that is a team that is cash conscious and perhaps has some bad deals of their own, but bad deals attached to better players, whether it's OEL, whether it's Schmaltz, Nick Schmaltz, the other guy that I always bring up because I think Nick Schmaltz is good, but you know, he's kind of a like softer middle six offensive forward, right? Like he's not really a $6 million a year player in the eyes of many in the industry. So, you know, there's guys like that, that maybe there could be a fit there. Like maybe there's a way to get a decent deal. And I still think Oliver Ekman-Larsson is probably in the minds of the Canucks, you know, a top four quality guy, right? Like a second pair defenseman. You know, a younger version of Alex Edler, if you will, by 4 years anyway. So, you know, I do think that the fit is so obvious that you can't ignore it. Like if the Canucks can give cash salary relief to Arizona and potentially upgrade their roster from the bottom end of their roster, you know, with considering those options. Now, OEL's a really bad contract, right? Like that goes through 2027. It's $40 million in salary liability. Like it's huge, huge nuts. I think it's one of the
$10 million cash.
It's one of the five worst contracts for defensemen in the sport.
pretty clearly. So, you know, tying yourself to that, it's a big whopping bet, no question. But, you know, and I explained this a little bit when I joined you and Blake on Sakaris and Price yesterday, right? Which was the way to look at it is not, you know, Blake threw out to me, you know, would you even do it for Roussel and Beagle? And the way I explained it was like, you're looking at 2.9 million in salary liability versus 40 million in salary liability. Like, the question is not, would you do Beagle and Roussel for Ekman-Larsson? The question is, what else could Arizona throw in to make it interesting to you, right? And if that pie gets big enough, does it become something you have to consider? I don't think the Schmidt for OEL thing makes a ton of sense necessarily, although you can see why Schmidt would be of interest to Arizona. Again, a very obvious fit. He can play the left and the right side. They only have Chikrin and Lyubushkin and maybe one other guy whose name I can't even think of to protect an expansion. Like, they have no D. Demers is up. Hjalmarsson's up. I guess OEL's the other guy. But Hjalmarsson's up. Demers is up. Goligoski's up. Like, they need defensemen. They need defensemen that right. can play. So, you know, you can see why people's wheels would turn that way, why, you know, it would seem like a natural fit to a bunch of people and why that sort of surfaced. I don't think that's an active consideration or a particularly likely one. I think the Canucks will be aiming higher or looking at the other option that we discussed last episode, which is the, you know, expensive, cheaper guy, right? Like the Marcus Nuttavaara type
yep.
deal. And Marcus Nuttavaara is hardly the only guy that fits that mold. So, you know, those are sort of the things that I'd be more expectant of in engaging what a possible Schmidt return could look like. But, you know, I'm not writing off the OEL thing yet, because I think Arizona is really motivated to move that deal. And if they're motivated enough to move that deal, could they at some point get to the Canucks or a team like the Canucks with a, you know, offer to eat enough salary or include enough additional good futures that the Canucks would value, that the team just kind of is like, fine, we'll roll that dice. You know, like, we're not going to roll that dice, but do we like Barrett Hayton as a potential third line center? Like, do we like Connor Garland as a really affordable first line caliber rate scorer? Like, do we like that? Like, yeah, you should, because Connor Garland's fucking awesome. So, yeah, no, I mean, it's an interesting one to monitor, because depending on how desperate the Coyotes get to offload that Ekman-Larsson deal, and I'm pretty sure they'll get pretty desperate, especially when you look at the structure of that deal and the size of some of the signing bonuses coming down the pike, is that something you have to consider for a team with Vancouver's cap allocation issues? I think it might be. And so I'm not closing the door on that one at all.
There's a couple of things that jump to mind for me. One is, and I've already seen a few people out on social asking the same question, like, so Nate Schmidt doesn't want to play in Vancouver, but he'd be open to playing in Arizona. Like, yeah. Whatever. I mean, that's his choice. Well, and I don't know.
I don't know if he would. Like, I don't have
any. No, I know, but that's just a question that's been floated. And I think it's fair, because the other one, look, if they're going to move off OEL, and it's the second year in a row that they've tried to offload that contract, and then you talk about, you know, sweetening it with Connor Garland or Barrett Hayton, and we talk about Michael Bunting on a recent, like, who the hell is going to play for that organization? Like, I get frustrated, because it feels to me like we are right back to square one with hockey in the desert. They just went and hired a junior coach who, you know, good for him, he gets the opportunity. But let's be honest, it was an attractive price point, too. For the Coyotes, like, who's going to play for that team, and how can they possibly think that they're moving forward?
Well, I think they have to rebuild. Like, I just think they have to rebuild. Like, they're perfectly positioned in that mushy middle, and like, they don't have a ton of firsts here, right? Like, they've sacrificed this year's first. I think they sacrificed one more. Am I right?
Yeah.
So from
when you say sacrifice, they got slapped hard by the league.
Yeah. Penalized. Yeah. But they sacrificed it to, you know, they have their own, they have their first next year. So it's this year's first that they've lost. Per cap friendly, they have their 2022 and 2023. So they don't have their first this year. And yeah, I mean, they have a lot of needs, like a lot of needs and a lot of expensive players. Like, I think the world of Christian Dvorak. 4.45, that's probably fair, but Phil Kessel at 6.8, I'm not sure about. Clayton Keller at 7+, like, I don't know about that. That's not looking like a very efficient deal. Schmaltz at 5.8, I think that would be a tough deal to move. Chychrun at 4-6, that's a steal. But Ekman-Larsson's a problem. And then Darcy Kuemper. Darcy Kuemper's obviously got huge value, especially as he's on the expiring on an expiring contract. He might be a really useful chip to move at the deadline for them. So, yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of work to do, but I don't know how you'd look at this roster and not think we almost have to start from square one.
Right, but it's been 25 years of starting from square one.
I know. It's sad, man. And especially with that arena situation and now the Sun's doing well, like, it's really too bad how things have gone for them in the desert. But, you know, and of course the ownership group didn't do themselves any favors, you know. Nor did the second-year GM threatening Katie Strang.
Right.
One wrong turn
after another.
Not hard to feel too sorry for this group. But yeah, I mean, when you look at that roster, and like, what would you be doing? I mean, I think I'd probably be hoping that I can get more out of Keller, more out of Dvorak, like that those guys will keep developing. And other than that, I'd be like, okay, let's reload around those guys. Like, hopefully I can ice a good team when Keller is 26 and Dvorak is 29, and hopefully like a Selke nominee. And that's sort of my template. Like, everything I'm doing is for 2 to 3 years down the line here, which means bringing in, and Chychrun's 26, right? Like, that's sort of my core group, and I need to reload around them so that I have a chance to make noise. But I do think the only route forward is to take on a couple of years of pain, and that might not be what the Coyotes want to hear, but I mean, I don't see any other way to do it, to be totally honest with you.
Well, this is the VanCast.
Yeah,
not Coyote Chat, so we should probably move along. How much due diligence would a team have to do if it truly was interested in Vladimir Tarasenko?
I mean, I love Tarasenko. I think Tarasenko's great.
Yeah, but is he the 5 straight 30-goal Tarasenko, or he's played 34 games the last 2 seasons?
Yeah, it comes down to the medicals, and that seems to be based on Jeremy Rutherford's ace reporting, the reason that this has fallen apart. He doesn't trust the club to manage his injury anymore. So, yeah, and you can understand why. I mean, he's gone under the knife three times in 2 years, and left the bubble because of it. Probably was rushed back in the bubble, on and on. Just a bad situation. And I think you'd have to be really confident in the medicals to take him on at $7.5 million. Like, you'd have to be confident that he's going to bounce back. But the underlyings on him suggest that he's still an elite player, like, generates an incredible amount. But if he's not going to finish the way that he did earlier in his career, and the last couple of years his percentages have been down, and the fact that he's had a shoulder injury, and what we've seen with Brock Besser post-back injury, and what happened to his shot velocity, right? Like,
yeah,
it's a pretty big bet you're making. Right now, if you get Tarasenko and you can keep him healthy and his shot doesn't rebound to its post-surgery form, you're looking at, like, in my mind, like a really good play-driving second liner, right? I don't think you want to pay $7.5 million for that. Right. If his shooting bounces back and he becomes an elite finisher again, then you're looking at, you know, really, really good value, like a really great player, an elite player. Is that a bet? I think that's a bet you'll find someone willing to place. Like, I do. I think someone's going to be willing to place that bet. It's a big one. No question.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, so we are 10 days now, or 9 as we record this, into the month of July. Buyout window is open. I know you have been strong on this idea that there's no need to rush into buyouts, that if you can trade contracts and get them off the books entirely, that's a better option. But what about for teams that want a little bit of financial security, if they're looking to make deals to poach teams in protection crunches and those types of things? Like, are you anticipating that we will see some buyouts here sooner rather than later?
I don't know. I don't have a really good sense of it. I won't be stunned, for example, if we see an early Vertanen buyout from a Canucks perspective. That wouldn't shock me. I'd be a little bit surprised, but it wouldn't be like stunning. What would surprise me would be like an early Braden Holtby buyout. Like, that would shock me. That's something you wait for. But yeah, I mean, if you're going poaching,
for an expansion crunch team, just to sort of lay this out, right? It's like, you can always effectively reach a deal and be like, okay, just, well, first of all, you can exceed the cap by 10% anyway right now, right? So you just do the deal, and then you put the guy on waivers, and then you buy him out the next day. And it's like, yeah, you're cap crunched as a result of the trade for something like 12 hours, but it's not a huge deal. You can just sequence things, sequence your other moves, sequence other signings. So, you know, I mean, again, you can be reactive, and I just expect teams to be, like teams generally are. Now, there are sometimes buyouts you see right away, you know, ones that are just no-brainers for teams, or they've already explored the market and they just have a very good sense that they can't move the guy. So yeah, we could see a couple really obvious ones early, but I think some of the ones that are more interesting, like Alex Wennberg, happened on the very last day of the window, right? Last year. That the more interesting ones, the ones where teams are trying to really trying to figure out a way out of their cap straitjacket and ultimately conclude that they can't, those are the ones that will wait. So the more interesting names that I'm looking at, like guys like Nick Schmaltz, like, you know, guys like Tyler Johnson, right? Like, could Tyler Johnson be a buyout? Could Nick Leddy be a buyout candidate, considering New York's issues and how buyoutable that contract is? Those are the ones that I'd expect teams to exhaust all other options before concluding that a buyout is, you know, an absolute necessity. Those are the ones that I'm, the bigger names, the more interesting ones, those are the ones that will wait.
All right. Final thoughts. Do we want to revisit the Stanley Cup final at all? It wasn't a surprise.
Let's just talk Kucherov.
That's fine.
And Brent, and obviously my guy, Colton.
Yes, awesome. The depth of the Tampa Lightning, and you've been on this for a while, that the guys on their taxi squad, their black aces, you know, could play high in a lot of lineups around the National Hockey League.
Most of their season ticket members.
I wish we had a wager on our predictions, but alas, it was we just kind of threw out guesses. But
I lost big time.
And I won.
You clearly won. I had this one idiot being like, Drantz knows nothing. He picked the Lightning to lose in the first round in 7. And it's like, I'm not allowed one sentimental pick for my former employer. Like, fuck off. Come on. I'm not allowed one sentimental playoff pick. Like, these are not ironclad. Come on, man. Come on. I'm allowed to pick the Panthers.
My favorite. And a ton of play for Kucherov after the fact. And I, you know, I saw people trying to shit on him for, you know, respect the game and respect your opponent. It was great. It was fun.
It was the best.
You win back-to-back Stanley Cups, I think you've earned the right to run your mouth a little bit. And so, you know, the thing that he said about Montreal. My favorite part in the whole bit that didn't really get a lot of play, though, was when he was talking about, he kept talking about Vasilevsky losing the Vezina to that guy in Vegas.
That guy. I love that. Look, first of all, Vasilevsky should have won the Vezina, right? Secondly, Montreal fans did celebrate really hard. And I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I don't know how else you would have reacted, but you know, it's fun to win in the Cup Finals. Good for them. Like, they deserve to celebrate, but when the player from the winning team then takes a shot at them, like, that's great. That's great. And look, there's been a lot of insanity around this Lightning Cup win. Like, that photo of Vasilevsky and Carey Price, you know, who I think wear the same chest protector. Like, Louis Domingue said that Vasilevsky wears a Bauer chest protector that's the smallest on the market. But I think that's outdated information, like from when they were teammates. Based on what I'm hearing, and what I'm hearing is obviously from our friend Kevin Woodley. I think Vasilevsky changed his chest protector and is actually wearing the same brand, the exact same equipment that Carey Price is in that photo. Everyone's just like, oh, it's horrible. It's like, shut up. Everyone needs to shut up. The cap thing, shut up. This is insanity. We the conspiracies to discredit the Lightning are out of control. Out of control. Ridiculous. This is a great team. Well managed. Did everything right. Vasilevsky's incredible. He should have won the Vezina. And Nikita Kucherov's a god for calling everyone out on their number one bullshit. I loved it. I loved every minute. I've already bought the t-shirt.
Vasilevsky's 26. He turns 27 next month. Like, that's a scary thought for the hockey world, that this guy, he's just coming into his own now.
Oh, he's a robot.
That photo was incredible. Like, he looked four times the size of Carey Price. I joked on Sakaris and Price that Price was going with the slim fit.
Well, apparently the difference is whether you tuck it in or not.
Yes.
But, I mean, look, Vasilevsky does not look that large in net, though. You know what I mean? Like,
no, and nobody had said anything during the series. No. It was based on one photo, and that's the other thing. Tampa has no villains, right? So people have to, they have to come after them on the salary cap stuff, and then the goalie's equipment. Like, there are no villains on that team. They're a hard team to dislike.
You're right, they are. I mean, Yangord could be a villain. Yangord could be a villain. I can cast Yangord as a villain, but it's hard. I mean, you're right. They are a likable group. They play great hockey. I loved the Igor Larionov story, too. And I love Joe Smith pulling up that Larionov tale about how much he loves watching Kucherov, because Kucherov plays the game, plays an East-West game that's hard to defend, and it's so rare in the NHL. And there is nothing I love more, JPAT, than there's this whole, like, whole generation, and I consider the Twins to be among them. But guys like Robert Long, guys like Radim Vrbata, guys like Igor Larionov, like, often European-based skilled players who now watch the NHL, and they're like, all anyone does is skate and shoot. They're like, where's the creativity and the teamwork? Like, I love the Capitals' power play and how the Lightning play. Like, that's like, a very common thread you get from talking to those gentlemen, and I love it. Like, I'm here for any time someone puts that on the record, because it's just so representative of how so many skilled players feel about the modern NHL and the contemporary game, and I think they're dead on. Like, I think they're right. I don't think there's enough of the, like, ticky-tacka intricate passing in the NHL right now, just because it's hard to do, because of the way that teams don't get the type of runway that this Tampa Bay core has to work together and stay together over the course of time.
Well, hockey season is over. The champs are the champs again. So congratulations to the Tampa Bay Lightning. We are officially into the offseason. The buyout window is open. So let's see what the weekend brings. We'll reconvene. Three more new VanCasts for you as we continue to chip away here through the month of July. Expansion draft just around the corner, and beyond that, the draft itself, and then to free agency.
So I say we get news next week, JPAT. I say we have something to discuss beyond just an AHL press conference postponement. I think we'll have meat on the bone next week. I'm pretty sure.
Well, and if not, we just make it up, because that's ultimately what we do. Yeah. Hey, we've been telling you for a while that the Athletic Hockey Show has expanded to 5 days a week. The Friday version is the Prospect Series with Max Boltman and Corey Pronman. And, of course, we are just a couple of weeks out from the draft. The Canucks holding on to that ninth pick right now. So you may want to check out the Prospect Series. That's available at the Athletic app. And check out our comment section for each podcast episode of that Athletic app. Rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple. And if you're not already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/VanCast and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. All right, that's going to conclude the week. Let's hope that there is some news to dive into next week. Regardless, we'll be back with three new episodes of the VanCast for you next week. But that's going to do it for now. For Drancer, it's JPAT. As always, thanks so much for your support and for listening to another edition of the VanCast here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.